Welcome to the Mountain Grapevine program on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. My name is Chuck Blethyn, your host for today's program. The Mountain Grapevine reports on all things grape and wine in the mountains of western North Carolina, and sometimes elsewhere. My programs will have interviews with movers and shakers in the viticulture and wine industries, as well as some educational sessions on wine etiquette, wine evaluation, and special value-added products that can be made from grapes.
Well, welcome to the Mountain Grapevine Radio Show, everybody. On the telephone today, we have Jennifer Felides from Silver Fork Winery down in Morganton, North Carolina. Jennifer is the owner and winemaker of Silver Fork Winery, and she's agreed to have an interview with us today. So, Jennifer, welcome to the program, and tell us a little bit about yourself, where you came from, and how you get started into this crazy viticulture business.
Hi, Chuck. Thanks for inviting me. Well, we're originally from New York and New Jersey. Went to school for chemical engineering in New Jersey and went into sales and marketing because there was more money to be made there, and it was covering J.P. Morgan Chase. So I was doing that for several years in Manhattan and just found corporate America. I guess we were a little disenfranchised with corporate America, and both me and my husband, Ed, after several years, looked at kind of reinventing ourselves. So we left. We left New York. We left our jobs. And we went on kind of a soul-searching mission. We knew it was a vineyard or a doggy daycare, and I know that both of those are two far-fetched ideas. But we went on an East Coast road trip to Charleston, Savannah, Florida, but came up through Asheville to see the Biltmore. Fell in love with Asheville. And then stayed here for about 2 weeks to really investigate the area, see where we might be able to purchase land. And from there, we actually noticed a site, landandfarm.com, where Larry Kehoe, previous owner, was actually selling the vineyard and the house. So we decided to take a day trip, talked with Larry, driving up the driveway, taking in the South Mountain Vista, just breathtaking. We decided to be apprentices with him that year because neither one of us were farmers. So it was 2.5 acres of vines. We came here every day, having lived in Nashville, and learned from him, and then took over in 2012. And here we are.
That's a long road to go from New York, Wall Street, down to North Carolina in the mountains in the Piedmont. Well, good for you. We've got a lot of new farmers here in the area. A lot of them have retired and come here. They don't know anything about farming. And Jeannie and I have been lucky enough to be able to help a lot of these people get started and figure out the ropes of how to do things in the mountain and grow things and raise chickens and rabbits and cows and all this kind of stuff. So it's sort of fun, with the vineyard part being a major piece of what we do here. You said that you came from the J.P. Morgan Chase area. What were you doing there, just quickly?
I was actually selling software to J.P. Morgan Chase. I was a global account director for a company called Computer Associates. So J.P. Morgan Chase was my account. And I had a team all over the world, sales teams covering them. And I had the account for about 7 years. So, and actually, as an Ed worked for J.P. Morgan Chase, so that's how we met. So that's kind of my background. But, so I wasn't doing anything chemical engineering related. I was more on the sales and marketing side. I was always really in engineering sales, kind of taking a technical aspect and be able to convey it more on a personal level. And then when we met Larry and looked at the vineyard and eventually embracing the wine aspect and making the wine, you know, there's a lot of chemistry involved with winemaking, so it's almost full circle. I'm doing more chemistry now than I did probably even in college.
You're very lucky that you have that background, because one of the discouraging people for a lot of people who are vineyard owners and winery owner wannabes is the chemistry can be a little intense once in a while.
I love the sales and marketing aspect because I like people. I love to talk with people. Usually in a chemical engineering background, they really kind of focus you on process control or being in a development lab, and that's not really where I kind of envision myself. So I was kind of steering my career at that point to sales marketing. So it was a natural extension just, I guess, of my personality. My time at corporate America made a lot of great money, but I had really nothing else to show for it. We're working 70 hours a week. We had a great bank account, but we just working too much to really enjoy it. So I kind of looked at it and said, is this really what my life is going to look like? You know, I would see colleagues of mine 10 years my senior looking haggard. I'm like, this can't be all there is. So that's where Ed and I were kind of really looking at our lives, something that could be a lot more authentic, something that could really put our skills to use and something that we could really build a life around. And this found us, I should say.
Well, you know firsthand that there is a great deal of personal satisfaction from growing grapes and making wine. I mean, it's just something about that hands-on thing. You can see what the results of all the work has been, and really, really helps you with your personal development, your personal skills, and certainly your peace of mind. I mean, one of the things I have here with my small vineyard is I go to sleep every night dead tired. I've never worked harder in my life, made less money, had more fun, and learned more and met more interesting people than I have since I officially retired.
It's really, I think, you know, I love New York. I just think we were not a lot of steel and concrete around you. I think we're meant to see the sky. I think a part of me personally was just very disconnected because I wasn't around nature in New York. So I think just being outside, I'd much rather be measured by vintages than fiscal years or fiscal quarters. So I think being measured by vintages and really feeling Mother Nature almost every day, and seeing how weather changes affect the grapes, the vines, the grass, the weeds, the flowers. I mean, I never really had any of that kind of perspective where I once was, and now we do. But I just see a lot more connectedness to Mother Nature.
Absolutely. My wife laughs at me all the time when I walk out through my vineyard, and I just stand there, and I smile. I'm not saying anything, not doing anything. Nobody's saying anything to me. I'm just standing there with a smile. And so you do. You feel very connected to nature.
There was one morning we had gone up. It was probably the first year we opened the place, so we're still all taking it in. A lot of hard work. You know, again, we were not farmers. We learned, and we were very blessed, actually, to have met Larry because we were apprentices with him. He taught us the ropes. He went through a lot of the trial and error. You know, there's different sections in our vineyard where he trialed different trellis systems, different clones, different spacing, all of that stuff that we didn't really have to go through the bumps and bruises that probably normal folks do when they plant a new vineyard. I was sitting out there drinking my coffee in a robe, in my bathroom robe, and the vines almost kind of, I went into them just to kind of check them out, and then 3 hours later, I'm still kind of pruning and kind of pulling off leaves. They're just kind of, it has a natural pull, and you kind of lose the world around you because there's such peace there, at least for me.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Let's go back to the 2.5 acres you have under vine. What kind of grapes are you growing?
So initially, when Larry owned the property, at 7 grapes. We now have 9 varietals. We have Chardonnay, Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, Petit Verdot, Chambertin, which is a French-American hybrid. We have also put in a couple of rows, experimental rows, to see how they would do, like Tempranillo and Malbec. And they're doing very well.
And how long have you had the winery and the vineyard there?
We are going into our 5th vintage.
For the purposes of people who have not gone through this and trying to put the toe in the water, so to speak, what would you say you did right, considering how you acquired the vineyard and winery where you are, and what would you have done differently?
Well, I think finding Larry, that was divine intervention. I think that really was Ed and I on a path and soul searching, and which led us to Larry, doing, you know, research in that regard. We were researching land, so we could have found, you know, a 5-acre plot of land and just started planting vines, but we inevitably found Larry. I don't think that happens very often. So that's what we did right, I guess, but I would call it luck or divine intervention. What I would probably also do, I guess, differently, I would have researched, and at the time, Larry owned the property. We actually pulled out a lot of vines in the Vedra, Syrah, that weren't doing very well, but now that I've made several vintages, I probably would have had some of those varietals, because even though they were a little young in terms of the kind of red wine they would have made, but we could have made something very interesting in terms of a rosé. So I kind of kicked myself for some of those early decisions that we made, just because I didn't have enough experience.
Well, it's a common error that a lot of people here don't spend enough time researching the kind of grapes they should be growing here in the mountains and in the Piedmont. And certainly it's a time mistake, because, you know, once you plant them in the ground, it's, 5, 6, 7 years before you start getting enough grapes to do anything with. And that's a lot of time to wait. And the farmers here just struggle with that part. So I've encouraged everybody wanting to do this to do some similar things. Spend a lot of time. Go out there and look at different vineyards. Look at, the different wineries. See how they're doing things. Ask them what they did differently. Ask them what kind of mistakes they made. And try to learn from other people. I mean, my goodness, this is a very, very expensive undertaking for most folks.
Sure. In addition, I mean, when we were apprenticing with Larry on the vineyard side of things, we became friends with our local wineries around town. We became part of the North Carolina Wine Growers Association, and we helped them with harvest. We helped them with the fermentations. We helped them with bottling. So we kind of really inundated ourselves with the whole wine culture. So what, learning their mistakes, their successes, what to do better. But as for, to your point on the varietals, we're now looking at, because the hybrids do so well, we don't have the luxury of climate in California. We get a lot of rain, a lot of humidity. These typical Bordeaux varietals sometimes don't thrive in that environment. Cabernet Franc does, Cabernet Sauvignon and Chardonnay, a little temperamental in this climate. So we're looking at other varietals like Albarino or Sauvignon Blanc or Riedel Blanc that might be a little bit more hardy, mildew resistant. So those are kind of new things that we may have wanted to investigate earlier. But at that time, we were still learning too much. So it was probably a better thing we didn't take on too much, because this industry also is all-consuming. You probably want to bite off more than you could chew, and I could see that being a big mistake.
Those of us who have spent some time in grade here know that it's just a huge black hole. I mean, you can spend gazillions of hours just digging and digging and digging and digging. Ultimately, you have to make a decision and start digging some holes and putting some plants in the ground.
You're going to fall sometimes. I'm constantly learning. We drank a lot of wine. I had a lot of winemaker friends in New York. I had been around vineyards, but doing it from the moment those buds pop in the spring and throughout the whole cycle, then harvest and crush and the whole thing, I have a whole different level of appreciation now what goes into a bottle of wine. Now having done it. Whole different level.
Oh, yes. Yeah. We all know that feeling, Jennifer.
Yes.
Tell me.
But just a sense of pride. I mean, that we have touched every single cluster with every single bottle. I mean, there is a sense of pride that we did that. So.
Well, you are what I call a classic vigneron in the industry. You know, there's viticulturists and there's enologists, you know, the winemakers. But the people who are the vigneron's, quite frankly, I stopped counting at 5 million miles back in the 80s of travel internationally, but I've been in a lot of wineries and a lot of vineyards around the world, and the best ones come from very small operations like yours, where you've only got a couple acres, and you don't put out 100,000 cases of wine every year, because you know it well, you know it intimately, you baby it to death, and you come up with the best wines.
When Larry had the place with 2.5 acres, we spent that at 3 acres. So now we're at 5, but a lot of folks, customers come in, like, because we're pretty busy in the tasting room, and we sell out, and it's a great problem to have, but they're like, are you going to plant more vines? I'm like, we prefer not to. We don't want to be far removed from the process, because that's where I think you start to lose quality. I mean, that's the reason why we moved down here. The reason why we did it. We still want to be intimately involved with every piece.
Jennifer, we're going to take a break at this point and have a commercial, and we'll be right back.
Today's program is being brought to you by Rufus Tincture for Vapors. Aunt Vicky was visiting her brother Barney up in Shelton Laurel when there was a terrible accident. Barney was mowing hay on a steep slope on his farm when his tractor rolled over and crushed his leg. His neighbor happened to see him from the adjacent field and come a-running. He used a locust post lying near the cattle gate to pry the tractor's fender off of Barney's leg so he could get out from underneath the tractor. When his neighbor brought him back to the house, Aunt Vicky took one look at Barney's crushed leg and came down with the vapors. Barney's neighbor reached into the chest pocket of his coveralls and pulled out a small tincture bottle. He popped the cork and held it under Vicky's nose. She sniffed it and her vapors immediately went away. When Aunt Vicky inquired what was in the bottle, she was told that an old hermit living up on Lightning Ridge named Rufus had made it for his wife because she was very prone to getting down with the vapors every time she saw a snake or a spider. Aunt Vicky set out to find the hermit and get her own bottle of tincture for the vapors. When she got into the old cabin where the hermit lived, she found Rufus lying on the front porch dead as a doornail. After the kerfuffle of his burial died down, she went back to his cabin and found an old notebook stuffed in a crack between the log wall and the field stone chimney. It had the Rufus formula for the tincture for stopping vapors. Vicky saw this as her chance to make a new product and make a few bucks along the way. Most of her women friends came down to the vapors at least once a week. Having a tincture to quickly revive them would be a godsend. So she began making it for sale using her kitchen to whip up batches for bottling.
She called it Rufus Tincture for Vapors in honor of the old mountain hermit who left the formula in his notebook. Rufus Tincture for Vapors is another unique product made in the USA here in Madison County, North Carolina. You can buy Rufus Tincture for Vapors for $1.298 at the retail counter of Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall. And now back to our regular program.
Welcome back, everybody. We've been interviewing Jennifer Felides of the Silver Fork Winery down in Morganton, North Carolina. She's been telling us about the history of where she came from and about the different kind of grapes that they grow and so forth. I just want to confirm, did I hear that you say you now have 5 acres under vine, Jennifer?
Yes, that's correct. When we bought the property, it was an operating vineyard. Larry Kehoe, the previous owner, had 2.5 acres under vines. He was just growing the grapes and selling them to several other wineries in the area. When we took over, we added another 3 acres, kept all the grapes, put in the winery, and started making the wine.
I know from past experience, I was one of the judges at the Asheville Wine and Food Festival last year here in Asheville, North Carolina, and one of your wines, the Four Dog Red Blend, was a blend of Cab Franc, Merlot, Cab Sauv, and Petit Verdot, won a gold medal. You want to tell us about that wine, where the inspiration came from, and how it came up with that particular blend?
Sure. When we actually looked at all of the varietals, we definitely, when we were looking at our wine list for the tasting room, we actually wanted to produce. Obviously, single varietals, Chardonnay, Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon, but we always love blends. You know, we just think there's just so much more complexity involved with blends. We were tossing around different names. Obviously, we are very big animal people, dog people, and at that time, we had 4 dogs. So Four Dog Red is affectionately named after them, and on the back of the label is their little profiles, their little heads, and each one, I kind of looked at the grapes and their personalities, and kind of matched them up to the personalities of our dogs. So that's effectually how we came up with Four Dog Red. Percentages of those blends kind of vary from year to year, depending on what we get in the vineyard, but those are the tried and true 4 grapes that we pick every year for that blend. It is our best seller. Obviously, people like it because it's a great wine. I think they also like it because of the name.
Well, some of the listeners of this radio show have had conversations with in the past, and they have a mindset that's sort of similar to mine, and I just want to do a reality check with you on a point. I used to think that it was heresy to blend wines. And I spent enough time in Hunter Valley, and they introduced me to some blending and how they did it, how they came up with tasting and developing these blends. And what they were doing is taking the hot weather grapes out of Hunter Valley and blending them with cold weather grapes that they were getting out of the Blue Mountains, about 50, 60 miles to the west, and coming up with some absolutely outstanding blends. How did this blending idea come for you?
Well, one, we love to drink different blends. I think with a single varietal, what's challenging as a grower and subsequently maker, you know, a winemaker, you're never going to get the same grape. It's never going to have the same exact rain days, exact same first sun. Some years may be a little light, some years may be a little dark. A blend actually gives the winemaker a lot more control to ensure some consistency. Single varietals, which is great about drinking wine, because you're always like, oh, I love the 2011 vintage. But sometimes as consumers, if they love a certain wine, they want that wine to taste like that every single year. And guess what? Mother Nature doesn't give you that every single year.
Amen.
So with a blend, it doesn't. With a blend, you have a lot more control about getting a certain style and consistency every year with a blend for us.
Well, it's a great way to come up with a good, consistent wine year in, year out. I agree with that. I've taken to drinking a lot more blends in recent years than I used to, so just because of that reason, they are so much more reliable from year to year. And quite frankly, I like the complexity that it gives you from blending.
It definitely is. You're getting structure, tannin, fruit, layers. Now, see, I mean, there's just so much more to play with a blend than a single varietal.
Let's talk about your wine bottling operation and labeling. Is that something that you do by hand also?
Yes.
Okay. So you're
buying. We are bottling Chardonnay tomorrow, our 2015 Chardonnay in stainless steel. We're bottling that tomorrow.
How many cases are you producing each year?
We started actually at roughly around 500 cases. We grew to 650, 700. We're probably going to reach about 900 cases this year. Total number of cases for all the varietals.
Okay.
So Chardonnay, we'll probably do about 60 cases tomorrow. Not much.
If we were to take a look at the labels that you have on the market today, how many labels do you have?
We will have nine wines on our tasting menu. So our Chardonnay, our Chardonnay Reserve, which is aged and fermented in French oak, our Dry Rosé, which is made from Cabernet Franc, our Chambertin, our Fordo Red Blend, we talked about earlier, our Cabernet Franc, we have a new red blend called Nonsense, and then Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot. So those are our nine varietals here.
So tell me about the 9 cents thing. How do you come up with the names of your whites?
Ed and I were just kind of talking about something that was fun, and our friends will vouch to say anytime we hang out with Ed and I, Nonsense ensues. So Nonsense seemed fitting for our next wine. So it's kind of named after Ed and I. But it is three vintages in three different barrels, French, American, and Hungarian oak barrels, with three different grapes, Cabernet Franc, Petit Verdot, and Merlot.
On the technical side, just for the few people I know who would be interested in this, are you using dry yeast or liquid yeast?
Dry yeast.
Do you put all your wines or just some of your wines through the special secondary fermentation?
We put all of our reds through the second fermentation, malolactic fermentation. We put our Chardonnay Reserve through malol. Our Chardonnay and stainless steel and our rosé do not go through malol.
Just one quick question back on the vineyard thing. I made a note here earlier when we were talking about the vines that you're growing there. What kind of a trellising system are you utilizing there?
We're using VSP for the most part. There's different spacing in the different sections. We have four sections here. The soil chemistry in each section is completely different. We use VSP for the most part. We're doing cane pruning a little bit more. We're going to be starting our winter prune in a few weeks here. So the Chardonnays will leave them a little longer because they usually bud earlier in the spring. We're always worried about that late frost. We're thinking about a different trellis system for the Chardonnay, just to kind of combat a lot of the mildew.
In the areas where you're using VSP, and you're thinking about changing the type of system?
Mm-hmm. Larry, actually, because again, Larry being grand experiment here, he had Ballerina in some cases, in some sections. Just that now that we have customers here, Ballerina, because the branch is hanging over, it just doesn't really look like a typical vineyard. Plus, as you're mowing, the actual shoots are getting all caught up in the mow. We had Ballerina trellising in some areas, but over time, we've actually eliminated that and going to vertical.
I assume because of the types of grapes you're growing, you're using some kind of an integrated pest management system?
Yes, we are. We tried to limit the amount of spray. Last year was just an incredible growing year. It was very dry. So the only thing we actually sprayed for the most part was just sulfur.
Everybody likes to stay away from the chemicals when they can, so that's a good thing. Let's talk a little bit about the winery and how visitors can find you. How can we get to you?
We have a website, www.silverfoxwinery.com. Our location of our tasting room is off exit 94, I-40. We're about 2.2 miles off the exit, very, very close. Typically, when we go to Yakin or some of these other areas, it's about 15, 20 miles to actually get to any of the tasting rooms. I think we have the luxury, we're so close to I-40, so we're capturing a lot of folks that are going to Asheville or Raleigh, coming from Raleigh, going to Asheville, and they stop in for a few hours. So we're really easy to find location. The address is 5000 Patton Road, Morganton, North Carolina. We also have a Facebook page, so you can find us there. And our hours, right now we're in our winter hours, which are Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 12 to 5. But typically, we're open from Wednesday through Friday, 12 to 7, Saturday and Sunday, 12 to 6.
If you were to get your place and find out that place is open, what hours was it?
Wednesday through Friday, 12 o'clock to 7 o'clock, Saturday and Sunday, 12 o'clock to 6 o'clock.
Do you have additional things that go on there? Do you have music things and wedding venues, any of that kind of thing?
In the tasting room, we have our tasting. Every Saturday, we have music varying from solo or duet acts inside, weather dependent, or larger bands in the summer. So every Saturday we have some sort of musician. So you can check our Facebook or our website for that information. That is free to the public. Saturdays in the summer, the last Saturday of every month in the summer, we do Movies Under the Stars.
Movies Under the Stars.
We love movies. When we were in New York, we used to go to Bryant Park on Wednesdays, pack a lunch, and just watch movies under the, movies outside. It was just very dreamy. We wanted to replicate it.
Sounds like a fun time.
Yeah, the first year we did it, it was classic movies with some Like It Hot, Breakfast at Tiffany's, we had some wine movies. This year will be Summer of Robin Williams, so big fans. So it will be Mrs. Doubtfire, Good Will Hunting, and Birdcage.
Okay. So, Jennifer, what other kinds of venues do you have at the Silver Fork Winery?
Well, we actually have been booking weddings. We had about 4 weddings our first year, 7 last year, here at the tasting room and the grounds. This June, we're very excited. We're actually breaking ground in the next couple of weeks on an event pavilion for larger weddings. So it'll be 6,000 square feet, bride and groom suites, a more intimate room called the cellar for rehearsal dinners, up to about 25, 30 people, and then a larger room will be able to accommodate 230 people. So that should be ready for June. We're booking more weddings, corporate events, things like that.
Sounds like a fun place to be if you're planning a wedding, folks. Keep that in mind. Well, Jennifer, I have to tell you, that sounds like you've got a fun thing going on down there in the Morganton.
We try to make it fun.
We've been talking with Jennifer Felides, the owner and winemaker of Silver Fork Winery in Morganton, North Carolina. She's given you all the contacts that you need to know how to get to her place. Sounds like there's some good things going on there, and I can tell you personally that you've really got to try that Four Dog Red Blend. That's a fabulous wine that won a gold medal last year at the Asheville Wine and Food Festival. Hopefully, you'll have an entry or two this year, Jennifer.
Yes, we will.
Fantastic. Thanks again, Jennifer. We really appreciate your time, and certainly the listeners appreciate giving the insight that you've given us at your operation and how you do things there.
Thank you so much, Chuck.
We really appreciate it.
This is the Mountain Grapevine on WART Community Radio from Addison County, North Carolina. If you have a friend whom you think might enjoy my program, tell them my Thursday programs will be rebroadcast on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Chuck Blethyn signing off for today. Cheers!